My reading this morning is from Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, near the end of the second long book in this very long story. Hobbits Frodo and Sam are being led by Gollum up a steep mountain pathway to find what he promises is a secret shortcut into the land of Mordor. They pause on the way and have a talk about, of all things, stories just like the one they're in. "I don't like anything here at all," said Frodo. "Step or stone, breath or bone, earth, air, and water all seem accursed, but so our path is laid." "Yeah, that's so," said Sam. "And we shouldn't be here at all if we'd known more about it before we started. But I suppose it's often that way. The brave things in the old tales and songs, Mr. Frodo, adventures, as I used to call them, I used to think that they were things the wonderful folk of the stories went out and looked for, because they wanted them, because they were exciting and life was a bit dull, kind of a sport, you might say. But that's not the way of it with the tales that really mattered or the ones that stay in the mind. Folk seem to have been just landed in them, usually. Their paths were laid that way, as you put it. But I expect they had lots of chances, like us, of turning back, only they didn't. And if they had, we shouldn't know, because they'd have been forgotten. We hear about those as just went on, and not all to a good end, mind you. At least not to what folk inside a story, and not outside it, call a good end. But, you know, coming home and finding things all right, though not the same, those aren't always the best tales to hear, though they may be the best tales to get landed in. I wonder what sort of a tale we've fallen into." Sam now pauses to recall some of the great tales told in his world of Middle-earth and suddenly perceives their connection to the journey that he and Frodo and, yes, the miserable Gollum, too, are making together. "Why, to think of it, we're in the same tale still. It's going on. Don't the great tales never end?" "No, they never end as tales," said Frodo, "but the people in them come and go when their part's ended. Our part will end later, or sooner." "And then we can have some rest and some sleep," said Sam. He laughed grimly. Sam laughs grimly because, although he doesn't know about Gollum's plans to feed the hobbits to a giant spider at the end of his shortcut, he knows that he'll never get home, if he gets there at all, except by taking the long way round. I can't think of a better way to begin a talk on the Buddha's teaching than this, although it may seem like I'm also leading you the long way round. Many thanks to Sean today for getting us wired up, our sound system together, and everything working. I'm just going to make a little rearrangement to this wire, which is where my manuscript needs to go. I missed seeing you last time. We were debating. People were calling and sending me emails and saying, "Don't come because of your ice storm." I noticed when I came, I found 6-foot snowdrifts still in the Fred Meyer and Safeway parking lots, and I thought probably a good idea that I didn't come. But it was the black ice on 82 that finally did the trick. I didn't want to join the masses of people spinning out. So long way, long wait, but here we are. Made it back again. Well, we started with Frodo and Sam, but let's leave Frodo and Sam in Middle-earth for now and meet Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, a monk from southern Thailand who for many years was one of that nation's best-known teachers of Buddhism. His approach, though, was very non-denominational and never geared toward conversion of non-believers. So his students included Christians, Muslims, and others, as well as Buddhists. He was less interested in what one believed than how we grasp our principles and try to put them into practice. He quotes here from a discourse which the Buddha delivered to the people of the Kalama clan when they asked him how to distinguish correct teachings from among the mass of various teachings being offered by different monks, ascetics, philosophers, and yogis. The Buddha's answer constitutes a declaration of intellectual independence. Any teaching, he said, should not be accepted as true for any of the following 10 reasons. 1, hearsay. 2, tradition. Rumor. 3, 4, accepted scriptures. 5, surmise. 6, axiom. 7, logical reasoning.
8, a feeling of affinity for the matter being pondered. 9, the ability or attractiveness of the person offering the teaching. And 10, the fact that the person offering the teaching is my teacher. Rather, the Buddha counseled, writes Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, that a teaching should be accepted as true when one knows by direct experience that such is the case. With this principle in hand, we can choose what is correct from the large pile of rubbish that has been smoldering in many commentaries on the Buddha's teachings. It's not that there's nothing of value at all in these, but that we must be rigorous in choosing what to accept, using the Buddha's own guidelines to separate out what is not correct. Well, you can hear from Buddhadasa Bhikkhu's words that he's not happy with a great deal of what passes as Buddhist teaching in Thailand or the rest of the world. We need to sort the gems from the smoldering trash. And if you've ever smelled garbage in a hot tropical country, you can appreciate just how pungent this warning is meant to be. Fish heads and mango peels marinated in the sun, or clear-cut diamonds. Which would you prefer to carry around in your pocket? If Buddhadasa Bhikkhu is right, the Buddha's own criteria should help us to pick and choose our religious truths wisely, even from among the Buddha's own teachings. Some of these criteria seem self-evident and easy to grasp, nothing you'd have to travel to Thailand to learn about. Hearsay is information that you hear from someone else with no further information to substantiate it. If you ever watched Perry Mason or other legal dramas on TV, a good thing to do when you're sick, they're still playing around noon. You've heard lawyers say, "Objection, Your Honor, hearsay." It's not enough to hear someone say it for it to be considered true. Although talk radio today seems to be built on the principle that if you say it often enough, it is. Tradition is not quite so easy to dispense with. It has a way of persisting, of reseeding itself, spreading by shoots and runners like blackberries along a fence. You might remember that great song, "Tradition," from Fiddler on the Roof. Even fairly new institutions, though, are fairly quick to develop traditions that can be as hard to change as those of a Russian village. Some young church congregations, while rejecting old standards from the hymn book, choose a contemporary song for their anthem, and soon wouldn't dream of singing anything else at the beginning or the end of services. It's a force to be reckoned with. But the Buddha said, get reckoning. I wish I could tell you that intelligent people are immune to the power of rumor, but you're too intelligent to fall for that. Rumors take narrative shape with just a repetition or two and soon acquire a life of their own, like something in a jar in a science fiction movie. We could experiment with generating a rumor right out in the open, with a clear acknowledgement that there's really nothing to it, about someone in this room. And then we could sit back and see how far it would go before we decide to put a stop to it. Do you want to try? You volunteers? Oh, I'll just pick a victim, you know, like that Bobby Wilson, who is known to be a frog smoocher. I saw it. Well, I think we all know better than to fool around like this. It's not just that such an experiment could get out of hand. We know that it would. Just like we know that thing that starts in a jar will be tossing a car before the movie is over. The Buddha never saw such a movie, but he knew the principle and he gave fair warning. He also warned us not to take our truth from what he called accepted scriptures. He'd never heard of the Bible, but the Indian subcontinent had its own scriptures called the Vedas. We speak of people who take something as written in stone or gospel truth. When I lived in southern India, people would roll their eyes at literalists who took an idea as Veda Vachaha, Vedic proclamation, much the same way. Moving right down the list, how could I do otherwise since it's the Buddha's list? Well, I'm just kidding. But I surmise that you get my point. Surmise is a bit like hearsay, but you hear yourself say it with no outside source. You suppose on your own that something is true without hard evidence in support. They're driving so slowly, they must be illegals trying to stay under the radar. He's got a turban. He must be a Muslim. Her speech is slurred. She must be drunk. That's the only possible correct explanation. Surmise is leaping to conclusions without much vertical clearance. You could bang your head pretty badly. I can't surmise what Pali word the Buddha used that's been translated as axiom, for which I even had to check my English dictionary. It has a precise meaning, I guess, in mathematics, and a less precise one in ordinary speech, but I think that both can be described as a statement or proposition that's regarded as being established, accepted, or self-evidently true. Axiom is often used to mean something like a proverbial expression like finders keepers, losers weepers. True enough unless the loser sees you with it before you're safely home. I'll have to leave the math part alone, given my own personal axiom that numbers just make me number and number. So far, so good. The Buddha's words seem easy enough to grasp when it comes to these undependable sources of truth. But what are we to make of his warning that logical reasoning can be a bad reason to believe a religious teaching? Isn't logic the best way to sort the good stuff from the fish heads and fruit peels smoldering away along with it? What's wrong with inductive reasoning, inferring general laws from particular circumstances, or with deductive reasoning, going the other direction to infer or predict particular circumstances from general laws or principles? Of course, these are both valuable mental operations that can save us time and trouble, many circumstances. I tried one dish at that restaurant that was marked with 2 red chili peppers on the menu and suffered a variety of consequences, beginning with a sleepless night and ending with a useless morning spent looking for patterns on the bathroom floor. So why should I try a dish marked with 3 chilies or order another one with 2? But does this tell me much about such marks at other restaurants? Maybe. Maybe you just got the wrong cook that one night. Try again another night, and who knows? Remember Frodo and Sam wondering what kind of story they'd fallen into? They realized that the only way to know is to stay within it until their part ends. But even as they realize this, they're able to view the story from outside as well as in. What they can't do is short-circuit things by logic or other mental operations. If you take a look at that shell that's on the cover of your order service, when the Buddha cautions us not to rely on logic for our religious truths, he might be saying, don't short-circuit the spiral of life. Like the sea creature growing its shell and growing into it. You must live in and through every turn of your life and being. You have to experience truth directly, in person, by going the longer and fuller way of story, not the short way of logic. Or maybe it's just me saying that, and not the Buddha. But I do have the Dixie Chicks to back me up. They had been rising steadily, you might remember, through the world of country music since 1989, but took a sudden leap to the top with a 1998 hit. And then at a concert in London in 2003, the lead singer criticized the U.S. decision to invade Iraq and said she was ashamed that the president was from her home state. You might remember what happened. They were abandoned by many fans, bombarded with hate mail, death threats. Their CDs were destroyed in public, crushed by a bulldozer in one patriotic demonstration. But in the process, they gained a renewed confidence in the truth that they were trying to tell, which they announced with a new album called Taking the Long Way, after its title song. It's been 2 long years now since the top of the world came crashing down. And I'm getting it back on the road now. I'm taking the long way round. Taking the long way round. A greater celebration of going the longer and fuller way with no shortcuts or short circuits you couldn't ask for. You might not like my singing, but if you don't love the Dixie Chicks, there's something wrong with you. Now please don't take that personally. According to the Buddha, remember, the 8th bad reason to believe is a feeling of affinity for the matter being pondered. Again, I don't know the Pali word, but the English word affinity means literally to border on something. The idea is that I'm close, I'm very close to what I have an affinity for. When I take it personally, the boundary between me and whatever it is gets blurred or obscured completely. Where do I stop? And where does it begin? So think of how deeply many people identify with their music. It's not just that they like it. If you don't like it, at least almost as well, they're not sure that they like you. This is a good way to understand how many people feel about their religion. If you're disgusted, frightened by, or seeing no value in my tunes, it's as if you felt that way about my prayers or my scriptures. The boundary between my tunes or my faith may easily get blurred. But the Buddha cautioned us not to take things so personally. I don't think he ever thought that he was teaching Buddhism, and I'm not sure how happy he would have been if he thought that that's what his students were trying to learn. They should be waking up, not becoming Buddhists, not taking him too personally. And this brings us to another bad reason to believe: the ability or attractiveness of the person offering the teaching. It should come as no surprise to hear that not all able and attractive teachers teach the truth. By all accounts, the Reverend Jim Jones was a highly attractive teacher, bringing together black and white, rich and poor, to share in many worthwhile efforts until he finally got them to share that Kool-Aid with each other and with their children. Osama bin Laden always spoke in a calm and reassuring manner. Hitler was a screamer, but millions found in him an enormously attractive teacher. Some still borrow his methods of fanning hatred against persons and peoples instead of focusing on real problems and real solutions. There's also an enormous power in what the Buddha called the fact that the person offering the teaching is my teacher. Every religious tradition teaches reverence for teachers of that tradition, especially its founders. That's no surprise. But we need to know their limits too. 1/4 of all people in the world think of the Prophet Muhammad as my teacher when it comes to religious truth, but he cautioned his community against taking things too far. He once saw some followers evidently cross-grafting male and female branches onto fruit trees. I guess this is common practice to make them more productive. But he remarked that that seemed strange to him. His background was in marketing, market trade, not horticulture. So they stopped grafting, and fruit yields from that orchard dropped sharply. The people complained, so he explained, "I'm a human being. So when I direct you in a thing pertaining to religion, do accept it. But when I direct you about a thing out of my personal opinion, keep it in mind that I'm a human being. Now, if I understand the Buddha correctly, he taught people to be careful even when he was trying to teach a religious truth. Please don't believe it just because someone called the Buddha said it. Just the fact that the person offering the teacher is my teacher doesn't make it true. Or at least, so we think he taught. There's no way to be sure. I'm taking Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, that old monk from southern Thailand, at his word that he is reporting the Buddha's words accurately and not just tossing me a fish head or a fruit peel. I'm taking a chance, too, of course. I never actually met the guy. And I'll admit that my trust is partly based on pictures of him with a great smile and a feeling of strong affinity with a senior monk who takes supposedly Buddhist teachings with a big grain of salt. That makes me feel that he must be very wise. That's because I think it's wise to take any religious teachings with a grain of salt, to test them like the Buddha says we should. Most religious liberals who I know are very skeptical when it comes to teachings from the religious West, from Judaism, Islam, and especially Christianity. They're very aware that there's a lovely core to these traditions, but you have to dig through so many fish heads and fruit peels sometimes to reach it that it might hardly seem worthwhile. However, when it comes to other traditions and the books or workshops or CDs or DVDs that pass them off as revealed truth, such caution is sometimes set aside. Sometimes just saying that something is Native American or Buddhist in origin is thought to guarantee its wholesomeness. What would the Buddha say? You notice that I have said nothing today about the principles and insights that he actually taught, about the mind and its cravings and the ways to make that craving stop. I actually find this quite moving just to hear. They describe a path that really sounds worth walking, though not an easy one. Maybe I'll take some long walks there someday. I hope I can make it by taking the long way like Frodo and Sam did, in spite of giant spiders and things like that. There's a trail near my home that starts with a billboard cautioning hikers about cougars and bears and what to do if you encounter them. You know, we're all mountain men in Oregon. But today, I've shared a cautionary billboard at the start of the Buddha's trail. It reminds us to keep our eyes and ears open, to conduct a search for truth and meaning that's both free and responsible, as it's put on the back of your order of service, opposite the spiral form of the shell. Just some good, plain advice. Don't be too quick to discard the teachings of any person or tradition, and don't be too quick to believe, unless it comes from the Dixie Chicks, in which case it's gospel. Amen.